Rick Emerson, only from Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
All right, 503-250-1080 in Portland at 1-800-727-5955. Coming up later, TV critic from the Oregonian, Peter Carlin's going to be here. We've got these. Rick, when are we going to get the rest of Sarah's hot lesbian sorority girl-on-girl action story? DM. P.S. F. Matt with his Rocky Moselle International Star Registry International alter ego.
This F. Matt could be sponsored by your business.
And this one. Subject line, Sarah's college years. Rick, in the words of sweet Virgin Mary, come again? Rick, I think we found the show topic for every day. Sarah gone wild. Inquire further, Rick. Inquire further. Oh, I will. No, that's on a list of... That's on a long list of things we're going to be inquiring further about. It's 503-250-1080 in Portland or 1-800-727-5955. And finally, this one. Listen to this. You know, I wouldn't drive like 5 minutes to see my lame ass. But listen to this. Rick, we flew... I mean, here's the thing. It's like... I mean, on the one hand, this is great. On the other hand, it's like you really got to call into question the sanity of the Canadian people. Because this is like the third such email I've gotten. Rick, we flew 4 hours on a plane in close proximity to a woman who had clearly not bathed in weeks just to visit your fine city and see Bigger Than Jesus this weekend. After one day in Portland, we have come to the conclusion that Portland is largely inhabited by hipster techno-clad geeks in black, rapidly aging deadheads as well. Unlike most of your freeloading internet listeners, we made the effort to see this great city and help your economy. Hoping for a good show Saturday night, your loyal Royal Canadian fan Robert, P.S. F. Matt with a TriMet bus.
This F. Matt could be sponsored by your business.
That's like the third group of people from Canada that have come to what? Maybe I'm just going about this all wrong. Maybe I ought to just be on in Canada. Maybe that'll be my story. Huge in Canada. And also Fargo, the Rick Emerson story. All right, well, whatever. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Rick, about Henry Winkler. Step off. Henry Winkler was the producer of MacGyver. You shut your fat mouth about him. F-Matt with a gum wrapper and a hanky.
This F-Matt could be sponsored by your business.
Okay, well, I'm well aware. He was not only was Henry Winkler the producer of MacGyver. I heard that he was one of the original, he's not a producer, but I heard that he was one of the original sort of money men that supported the guys who developed the show Friends. I don't know if that's true or not. It's one of the many things I heard. All right, coming up, Peter Carlin for the Oregonian, your phone calls, email, and all that. This is Tim Riley's in the KOTK newsroom.
And now, it's not just news. It's news with Tim Riley, live from the newsroom of Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
A Gold Hill man arrested for choking his girlfriend and then trying to throw her into the river is now off to jail. 38-year-old Rick Lewis pleaded no contest to charges of assault and attempted assault. Prosecutors say they might dismiss some other charges. Lewis's 21-year-old girlfriend had been late picking him up. He got mad, choked the woman, and pulled her hair. He then tried to throw her off a bridge into the Rogue River in Medford. A passing vehicle said, "Leave that girl alone," and distracted her, and she was able to escape. Then searchers have just found a body on the Oregon coast they believe is possibly that missing clamming woman. Paul McCartney's wife needs major surgery. Having a baby damaged her, the metal plates that were put in Heather Mills' pelvis. Doctors want to operate on her as soon as possible to put some metal plates back in.
Like, if you ever needed another reason not to have children. I mean, good Lord. If there was ever strong enough motivation to get on the pill. Imagine, if you will. I mean, we all know, I think, in theory, that having children isn't... No, it's not a big cakewalk. It's not a walk in Central Park. But I mean, if you have metal plates inside your pelvic bones, and having children is actually enough to dislodge metal plates in your hips, it seems like that's maybe something you ought to just go. I don't know. Just go take a kid from some family in St. John's. You'll be better off. He'll be better off. Everybody wins in the end. And then you're not having your pelvis shattered. Jesus.
I mean, I can't imagine having the bus runs over those metal plates when it drives down NATO in the afternoon.
Well, it's like, can I just tell you this? And I'm not going to gross anybody out. I won't share the hideous, you know, details with you. But I knew this woman one time, and it's like, I didn't know her all that well, but it was a girl that I worked with. She was a sales girl, and she'd had a kid. And she'd come back to work after a certain, you know, actually pretty quickly. She'd come back to work. And she was one of those I can have it all women, you know. So she like had the kid, and like 3 days later was back like selling radio. So she's back in the office, and at one point she said, "Well, I got to go to the hospital today. I got to get some follow up work done." And I said, "Oh, I hope you're okay." And she goes, "Well, I just had a baby, so I have a bunch of stitches I have to get removed." I'm like, "What?" You know, I don't want to know where. I don't want to know why. I don't want to know how that all worked. I don't want to know about, because you know what? Because stitching equals tearing. That's what it means, man. It's like, unless the baby came out packing a box cutter of some kind, unless the baby was the baby exceptionally sharp around the edges or something, you gave birth to some cubist type baby. I mean, that's okay. Let's never talk about that again.
Well, those sales chicks always marry the guy with the big car dealer account anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, next is When It Happens, I'm Jim Riley.
All right, 1-800-727-5955 or 503-250-1080. This one from Steve, and it just says, "Damn it, will you get to the Pope story once and for all so I don't have to spend another day listening to you talking about getting to the Pope story, and then at the end of the show announcing, oh, you know what, I never got to the Pope story. I know it's in front of you, just read it." No need to be caustic about it or anything. It's just yesterday we had
bitter there, man.
Yesterday we had many things we didn't get to. There was a whole pile of things we didn't get to yesterday, and I know that that's typically the case, but it was even more so the case yesterday. Not least of which because of this announcement that we were never able to get to. Okay, the Pope thing is this. It's actually not. It's not all that big of a state, but you know that there's this Mel Gibson film that's coming out. This movie called The Passion of Christ. I think they dropped the additional "the," so it's just The Passion of Christ. Which is this movie documenting the last 12 hours of the life of Jesus Christ. And it's coming out from Mel Gibson. It's an independent film he's put out from Icon Productions, which is his film-making company. And first of all, it's like the very definition of a vanity project. Because it's like a 2.5-hour film about Jesus entirely in Latin and Aramaic, which seems like something almost immediately that you don't want to watch. And I was in the control room the other day, and they were showing little bits of it, and you know, it just looks violent and brutal and bloody. And I understand that the story of Jesus, you know, whether one believes it or not, I understand that at least the story of Jesus is not. I mean, it's a guy having like thorns shoved into his head and being nailed to a stick. I mean, it's like there's no way to make it a pleasant story, especially because I don't think the movie covers the actual the alleged resurrection and ascension into heaven and so forth. So it's just a guy having big spikes pounded into him and stuck up on a dogwood tree. And then he says, you know, whatever. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. And then he bleeds a lot, and then it's over. And then we all go home, I guess. And so that's it. So no, at first, it's a movie that no one really wants to see. And plus, the movie apparently paints the Jews in a less than favorable light, which Catholics seem to have a bit of a problem doing anyway. Catholics, that sort of seems to be a fallback position for a lot of people in the Catholic Church, regardless. Catholics, well, they make a lot of noise about how they're, you know, they open to people of all faiths and all belief systems, and how it's the Catholic Church is the big tent, and they don't turn a blind eye to anybody, and they don't try to disparage any other faith. Unless, of course, you're coming over from Germany on a boat because there's a guy trying to liquidate you and your entire family, in which case the Pope may or may not like offer to help you out with that in any sort of a way. But anyway, so the movie apparently paints the Jews in a negative light, and so there's been this whole scandal about what's the Pope going to think. What is the Pope going to think when he sees the movie? Is he going to, you know, is he going to say that it's good? Is he going to say that it's bad? So what happens is the Pope apparently watches the film. They put it on some big screen television, like you have any choice with that guy. They put it on a big screen television. The Pope sits there. They pop in the VHS. He watches the movie. And then the word from the Vatican, from the Holy See, as they call it, is that the Pope says, "It is as it was," which apparently means that the Pope feels that it's an accurate depiction of the crucifixion of Christ, according to the Bible. So that comes out from the Vatican, that the Pope, you know, gives it a thumbs up and says, "This movie is accurate." That's from, like, the Pope's whatever, like personal secretary. And 2 days later, a spokesperson for the Pope comes out and says, no, the Pope has never seen it. The Pope had never seen the movie. He didn't see the movie. He has no idea what you're talking about. And the secretary says, well, no, the Pope saw it. I was there. We were sitting together on the couch. We were having jujubes. He watched the movie. He liked it quite a bit. And the spokesperson comes out again and says he hasn't seen it, much less endorsed it, much less says that it's an accurate, said that it's an accurate depiction of history. And so now there's this giant Peggy Noonan. Weighed in with this, you know, this huge column of, well, what in the name of going, you know, what in the name of hell is going on here, and it's this big public relate, when I think we all know what's going on. The Pope doesn't even know the movie, except the Pope doesn't even know who he is anymore. The Pope thinks that he's Hopalong Cassidy at this point. You know, the Pope has no, where am I? You're on a merry-go-round, Your Holiness. Whee! That's it, man. The Pope just sits there. The Pope wakes up every day. And it's like being in one, it's like being in one big virtual reality room when you're the Pope. You have no idea where you are. The Pope is, where am I at? You're at the zoo, Your Holiness. All right, where are the monkey cages? Over there, you know. And meanwhile, he's just sitting in a closet somewhere in the Vatican because the guy's brain is just gone. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but it's like he's, but the guy's like 190. I mean, he's as old as, he's a, you know, Gerber baby in a robe, man. That's what that guy is now. And so, but this is this whole scandal. And so what's obviously happening is that the Pope hasn't seen the movie. The Pope doesn't know even know what day it is anymore. And it's just a gigantic battle behind the scenes between all of his spokespeople to try to sort of take the reins in the absence of a new and vibrant Pope. That's what's going on. So, I mean, and I say this as a guy, you know, the former Catholic, 15 years, man. So it's like the next time you read some sort of statement attributed to the Pope, just realize that the Pope has no, it's like Stalin, you know, because Stalin was dead forever. Stalin was just dead for, like, weeks. You know, and still these, like, proclamations were coming out of it. And Stalin was dead and remained dead, and undiscoveredly so, by the way, because no one wanted, they were afraid to go into his room because he would just, exterminate anybody that bothered him. You know, and so there was all this, when Stalin died, there was all this business of the, well, Comrade Stalin has been very quiet lately. He, you know, and they tell these stories of people going up to, literally going up to Stalin's bedroom door and just going, Comrade Stalin, are you sleeping? Comrade Stalin, you know, and meanwhile, he's inside just half-lifing away into the bed. But nobody wants to come and interrupt him. Nobody wants to wake him up because the next thing you know, he's going to have your kidneys put on sticks, you know, somewhere. And, like, you know, he's going to have you, like, parted out, you know, into a gulag like an old Chevy. So so that's what's going on with the Pope. So the next time you read anything about that, that's what that's about. You know, so let there be no question about it at all. All right, next up, we have this from Chris. Chris is subject. This is, I need information, I think. Chris says, yesterday I heard someone making a reference to being informed. Everyone giggled as though there was some sort of private joke going on. Does being informed mean something that I'm not familiar with? Can you please explain this to us who've only been listening for a few weeks? All right, here's the thing. You know what we ought to do at some point? We ought to just do an entire Rick FAQ. Because there's one on the website, but it's kind of out of date. It doesn't reflect a lot of the things that have just recently come about in the... you know, in the Rick Emerson Show, things that are recent developments. Because there's all kinds of stuff, and we don't intend to make the show exclusionary. See, there's a lot of shows, a lot of radio programs that you're not going to understand. You're not going to, there's going to be all kinds of things that get mentioned, all kinds of things that get said, and you don't understand it, you know, if you haven't been listening for a certain amount of time. And a lot of shows do that intentionally because they want it to be some sort of, like, secret society, which is not the case with us. It's just that we often forget that there's people, you know, who haven't, you know, they haven't been listening forever. They haven't heard everything. Couple things spring immediately to mind. There's the informed, which is what Chris emailed about. I forget where that even came from. I don't even remember where the phrase becoming informed, I don't even know from whence that derived or where it originated. But the thing about being informed, we were doing a whole show one time about, I think we were talking about the term 420, you know, the 420 for the, you know, the forget going out there and smoking the devil's weed, going out there and smoking the pot with the kids. And we were talking about 420 and where it came from, the origin of it. And then people started weighing in with what they called it, you know, because everybody has their own sort of, like, terms for it. Everybody has their own kind of little code, like if you're in high school or whatever, about guys going out and getting their bong on. And somebody called up at one point and said that he and his friend referred to it as going and becoming informed. And that's how they would get it under the nose of whatever, the man or the, you know, the school or whatever. They would talk about being informed, and they would talk about going out and gathering information. And information was the... information was the substance, getting informed was the actual act, being informed was the state. And so that we just sort of immediately adopted that as our own term. That became our own term for going out there and just, you know, locking and loading, as my friend John would say, between snowboard videos on the couch. So if you hear someone refer to gathering information, becoming informed, they're an informed citizen. It just means that they're at home with a black light poster and a lava lamp, listening to, you know, Dark Star, you know, live in 1975, you know, San Francisco or something. That's what that means. I don't know if there's anything else like that. What else? Oh, there's the F-Mat. F-Mat. Well, we'll get, you know what we'll do? I don't have time to do it now. We'll do a whole show. At some point, we'll set aside, like, an entire thing. At some point, we'll set aside an entire, like, hour. We'll take 20 minutes, 25 minutes, whatever long it takes, and we'll do an entire set of things that you would never understand if you were just casually tuning in as a Rick Emerson listener. We'll explain it for everybody. We'll do that at some upcoming point. We got phone calls coming up. Peter Carlin, we got more of this to get to. Email, and the whitest thing you've ever heard in your life. It's all coming up. It's the Rick Emerson Show on Hot Talk to Nettie Cage again.
Only on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
From the KOTK newsroom, here's your Northwest update.
It's 124, I'm Tim Riley. Now when you install a high-efficiency gas furnace, you'll pay nothing for 12 months. You'll even get $550 back. For information, call Northwest Natural at 1-800-BOREHAM-123. Beginning Monday, January 26th, five-time Emmy Award winner Dennis Miller will bring his brazenly sharp comedic take on serious issues to his trademark Take No Prisoners new CNBC hour-long primetime talk show. He explains why this program will be different. He also talks about the common sense revolution.
I want to do the same things that everybody else is doing in the way of news. You can't avoid that. You're not going to make up your news. The news is what it is. I want it to be more cathartic. I'm literally going to shoehorn my opinion in anywhere I can. If I think something's crap, I'm going to say it. If I think something's valid, I'll say it. I'm being hired to be me to some extent. I'm not just going to go out there and neuter all my instincts. I think people are pissed off nowadays. And I think there's a common sense revolution coming. And I'd like this to be ground zero for that common sense revolution.
A common sense revolution. Thank you, Thomas Paine. No one... Can I just tell you that this business about Dennis Miller suddenly becoming conservative, and I don't know if it's... I mean, I'm not even really sure if it's true or not, but if it's true, it impresses no one. Because it leaves no one happy. Because here's the thing, is that really hardcore conservatives, I mean, the guys who disliked Dennis Miller to begin with, aren't going to like him now because he's just too smart. That's the thing. I mean, that's... And this has nothing to do with being a Republican. I'm not saying Republicans. There's a difference between being... Just as there's a difference between being a Democrat and being some guy that hangs out at the vegan beanery on Hawthorne, there's a difference between being a Republican and being some nitwit with a rebel flag on the hood of your car. And those guys are never going to like Dennis Miller because those guys are deeply, deeply stupid, and Dennis Miller is intelligent. And there's nothing that stupid people hate more than somebody who's smarter than they are, which is almost everyone, if you're someone like that, and especially Dennis Miller. And, of course, you know, the liberals and leftist types don't, because it's so brazenly obvious that he's just sort of switching gears here to, you know, to try to salvage, because this is going to be, look, it's not like everything I've done has been like a gigantic success in my life, but how many shows is this now for him? Is this like, what, his fifth program?
At least, yes.
Because he had like three in a row that were canceled on Fox, and then he had the HBO thing, which was the most successful of any of them, and that got yanked out. And so now he's got another one on where, CNBC?
CNBC, yes.
CNBC, the home of Jerry Nachman, well, not anymore. Now that he's dead. But, you know, CNBC is just sort of... CNBC is just where everything sort of washes up. It's like after, you know, it's like they had that news story a while back about that that boat that was hauling Nike shoes that sunk. Like, they all eventually washed up in Malaysia. That's what CNBC is for talent. You always just sort of end up there, or KPM.
Well, anyway, Dennis is sure this program is perfect for him at this point in his life.
This fits me. I can tell. I'm at that point in my life where I don't give a damn what people think anymore, and I'm just going to go out and say exactly what I want to say, and they'll make up their mind about it.
Well, this program is going to be on Monday through Friday and Saturday from 9 to 10 p.m. on CNBC.
It's going to be six days a week.
Yeah.
And it'll be seen by no one.
Nobody. Especially CNBC.
Let's take a poll. It's off the air within a year.
Not even that long.
I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, which could apply to any of us in broadcasting. I expected to be off the air like a year and a half ago. So, you know, I may be celebrating my my correct prediction about Dennis Miller being off the air. I may be celebrating that from, like, my couch. You know, or from a fish taco stand somewhere, you know, like in Monterey. But that's not going to last. So you just enjoy it. It's a short ride, Dennis. Save some money.
Absolutely. Well, there's a snow advisory in effect for Clark County areas above 1,000 feet, and that could mean snow in downtown Vancouver, Battleground, Hood River, Cascade Locks, and Stevenson, Washington. Ray, for the rest of us, Tim Riley, KOTK News.
Got an opinion? Pick up the phone and call. Lines are open at 503-250-1080 or toll-free 1-800-727-5955. Rick Emerson on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
All right, 503-250-1080 in Portland. I always get accused of... We take phone calls and I ignore them and I don't go to them, so we'll do some of that. But it should be noted, and I was reminded of this, that Winkler's... Henry Winkler's kids are apparently dating the Olsen twins. So, got to give him up for that. So, it's like, that's sort of a, you know, he's not able to do it himself, but he's sort of doing it by proxy. Like a one degree of separation kind of a thing. All right. We're going to go to Greg and your phone calls in a moment. Let's talk to the world famous Hog Whitman. What's up, man?
Hey, Rick.
Yes.
I was listening to your Pope thing.
Yes.
And you are so going to hell.
I'm not going. It's complete. I don't mean any disrespect to the Pope, but old is old, feeble is feeble.
Disrespect. Hopalong Cassidy in a funny hat.
I'm saying the
Gerber baby with what?
Baby in a robe.
Just if there is a hell, okay. I haven't. You know, the votes are still out for me, but
yeah.
If there is a hell, you got frequent flyer miles, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one way ticket. I think you'll just. Bypass the security check.
They'll wave me right in.
Yeah, they're not going to sniff you or nothing.
No, we need to check this guy. No, he's with me. No, come on in.
Yeah. Where's he been waiting for?
I'll be on the list. Be me plus one.
So, anyway, why did I call? Oh, yeah, I missed something earlier, but I just had a little funny story, I guess. This is from Mrs. Whitman. Mrs. Whitman works at a certain luxury car dealership.
Yes.
And a woman brought in her certain luxury car because her seat wasn't working. You know, they have those electric seats.
I do indeed.
Well, anyway, the mechanic came in, and Mrs. Whitman became aware of it. He came in to get some gloves, grumbling about a health issue. And evidently, the seat wasn't working. I'm not making this up. Because there was a certain female pleasuring device on said seat. So anyway, the mechanic changed the batteries and charged her $85.
There you go. Excellent. So, and you heard this where?
This is from Mrs. This is straight from Mrs. Whitman. She was there. This happened.
An unimpeachable source.
An unimpeachable source. She doesn't know how to lie.
Well, it's. I mean, I've heard. You know, other sort of instances like that where it's like, you know, that some guy will come over. You know, she hires the Maytag guy to come defrost the refrigerator or whatever, and then just finds like the huge, you know, dildo or something inside, and it's like you gotta. I mean, that's sort of the female equivalent of guys always wanting to put their manhood into an inanimate object.
Yeah, well, I couldn't help but wonder, you know, because, you know, a normal procedure is once the mechanic does a repair, he has to take it out and road test it.
Okay. We'll just move on. On a cell phone, it's full-time listener Greg. You're on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK. What's up?
All hail the beautiful, hopefully, lesbian story, Sarah.
Yeah, well, we keep pressuring her, but, yeah.
Rick... As one of your biggest fans and supporters,
yes.
You are on the Hell Express, buddy. First of all, you start ripping on Captain Kangaroo, which actually got my dandruff up a little bit.
I didn't rip on Captain Kangaroo.
You wanted to rip him into shreds and drop him from the ceiling, face it.
Then you start calling
the Pope the Gerber baby. Hey, you know, at least you haven't said, like, screw Dornbecker's or anything. You want me to go get some kids from Griner's for you to kick?
Actually, speaking of that, in a brilliant segue... Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Mr. Screw Dornbecker himself, from the Oregonian TV Critic, with a heart full of hate, a head full of snakes. Peter Carlin, how are you, my friend?
I'm fine. I'm glad that guy was talking about me behind my back.
That was genius, man. That was a brilliant lead. And I don't know if it was planned or not. If it was, I don't want to know. That sounded... That was a seamless transition. And I was not ripping on Captain Kangaroo. It was an offhand, irreverent joke that maybe some people did not appreciate the...
chopping him up in the little
I never said chopping him up. I just said it would be funny if at the funeral... If everybody looked up and suddenly they were rained on by pieces of Captain Kangaroo. See, Peter's laughing. He's laughing. It's funny, you dicks.
Somewhere Mr. Green Jeans is crying his eyes out.
it's just amusing stuff. And again, I don't mean any disrespect to the Pope with anything I say, you know, because it's not the Pope's fault. It's the fault of the Pope's handlers. It's, you know what, the Pope has no business. The Pope doesn't want to be packed into that suit and, you know, taken, you know, stuck out in a chair at St. Peter's Cathedral. So, you know, it not knowing where he is or what time it is. The Pope just wants to be left alone to eat, you know, to drink liquid diets and whatever. And look at the funny pictures on the television. That's all he wants. He doesn't, they have no business sticking. They have no business manipulating and using the Pope and sticking him out there trying to either get this Mel Gibson film sort of accepted or condemned. I mean, it's like the Pope is just a tool at this point because he was old when they put him in. They didn't say that at the time. They said that he was relatively young, which should tell you something about it. I mean,
that was 25 years ago.
Yeah, but I mean,
people age in 25 years.
I'm not disputing that, and I'm not saying that there wasn't a time when he was healthy. I'm just saying that, you know, because popes are in for life, right? That's the thing. Popes are in until they die.
That's the deal.
But it just seems like the Pope has reached a point where he is no longer useful as the head of the Catholic Church, and it seems unfair to him that they keep rolling him out there and using him as this figurehead to try to do things when clearly he's out of it. I mean, and I don't mean any. I mean, look, when I'm in that age, I'm going to be out of it. Mm. But you wouldn't, you know. It's like Reagan, man. It's like, you know, when the guy's falling asleep in cabinet meeting somewhere and, you know, it was a little foggy on breakfast by the time lunch rolls around. That's a guy that you want to remove from the nuclear football. You know what I mean? It's just the way it is. So,
yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine, man.
Thank you for...
You know, I'm taking it a day at a time.
So are you, what do you have to do? Is it like a sick day or a work day or something?
It's the kids don't have school day, so I took the day off.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Well, let's do this. We'll come back with Peter O'Connell. We're going to talk about the debates. The debate last night, we're going to talk about the television stuff, and we're going to discuss the whitest thing in the history of the world.
I was admiring that.
Right there. I've got it right here. You can hear it. It's the whitest thing that's ever existed. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on Hot Talk 1080. KFTK.
Rick Emerson, live from Portland, only on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
All right, Sharon Dillon has the traffic.
Rick Emerson, only from Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
All right, it's 503-250-1080 in Portland or 1-800-727-5955. Rick, on your revised FAQ, whenever you do it, you should explain the Fatty Arbuckle reference. How many people do you suppose know what that means? Speaking of which, I think I'll go have a Jerry Coke. All right, that's Steve.
Jerry Coke?
Cherry Coke.
Cherry Coke.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's 503. Jerry Coke means something.
Altogether different.
It's 503-250-1080 in Portland or 1-800-727-5955. We're here with Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. So did you see the debate last night?
I missed the debate, but I did see the Diane Sawyer interview, and then I saw the Letterman thing.
With Dean. So what do you think about the Scream?
You know something? The Scream is like, I'll tell you what, I've got a couple different sort of paradoxical feelings. On the one hand, I think the Scream and the speech leading up to the Scream revealed in all too vividly the limitations of Howard Dean. I mean, perhaps. I don't feel like I necessarily have a horse in that race just yet. On the other hand, I think the coverage of the Scream, the only thing worse than the speech and the Scream itself is the nonstop coverage of it as though that were the crucial thing, the one thing that's worth talking about. And to see the sort of spittle on the corners of the lips of these TV people as they get into this, you know, and also what you've been reading about in the news magazines for the last few months about Dean. I mean, it seems to me that I've had this feeling for months that the mainstream media political guys did not like Howard Dean, maybe because they didn't see him coming. And the fact that he had suddenly leapt to the fore contradicted everything they've been saying about the race. And it seemed like for the last couple months they've been spoiling to take the guy down. And you've got, in the same week, you've got Time and Newsweek just doing blistering covers about this guy. And it's like, it seems like they're not really getting into the issues. They're not really getting into what it is about this guy, you know, what he believes in and how that stands, you know, in relation to what the, you know, the current administration believes and what the other guys believe. It's all about the horse race. It's all about, you know, these kind of nonsense side issues. And, you know, I think, you know, Exhibit A now is the whole response to the guy's speech.
Well, as soon as we heard it, too, I mean, I can't pretend that we're, like, somehow above the fray and better than everyone else, because I came in that, whatever it was Tuesday, Wednesday morning, I guess, I came in Wednesday, I'm like, did you hear that? Do we have that soundbite of the...
Of course.
Yeah, I mean,
there it is. And it's like, it's the worst thing, it's the most stupid thing the guy's ever done, and that was only the icing on the cake. I mean, the whole speech was so screamingly inappropriate, yeah. Eventually, literally, but, you know, it's like... It's a bummer, but I mean, the thing is, it's the way that the mainstream media has just, like, that's all they can talk about now, and you don't even know what these other guys stand for.
Well, the thing about the scream, and again, we just beat that thing like a gong. Do we have the, you can tell them in the media. Do you have the full 10 seconds? The full?
Yes.
All right, well, whatever it is, but you know, the thing where he's like, Oregon and California. Yeah, I mean, and we came in and we totally planned it all day in it because it was hilarious, but on the other hand, I also am not under the impression that that's sort of like the whole of Howard Dean, that's like him in totality.
Well, this is about, he's got a temper problem. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? I saw on NBC, they did a piece a couple weeks ago, I saw where they're going on about, like, well, he's got this long, you know, it's been going on for years. And they went back through, I think, more than 200 TV appearances the guy has made since he became governor in the, you know, 1990, 1991. And of those hundreds of appearances, they found a small handful of ones where he became testy or sharp. And then the one they showed was just like, Exhibit A, here he is blowing his stack. There was some, you know, he was having a political, you know, a debate with somebody over a political issue, and some guy was like unreeled some questionable statistic. And then Governor Dean just looked at him and said, you know, that's crap. And he said, no, that's not what the statistics say. And he went back and he reiterated the correct statistic, and the guy was just silenced. And it's like, that's not temper. That's just a guy, you know, not taking
something. Saying something is crap. Well, what we said after this, I mean, I that just makes me love the guy even more. You know, the scream and then the idea that he would, tell something to somebody is crap. That's a guy that I want.
Yeah.
That's a guy that I want in there, you know.
That's the appealing thing about Howard Dean, whether he's got the, you know, the actual, you know, gristle underneath it to really, you know, to lead, as they say, through these troubled times. You know, that's still, you know, to be determined, I guess.
But, you know, the thing about Howard Dean, and I don't know if the Democrats are just stupid. I'm inclined to think that they are. Because, see, the Democrats are the worst combination. Like, Republicans, you know, the thing is, Republicans are stupid and evil, but Democrats are stupid and incompetent, you know? And it's like, I don't even know which is the worst combination, but so it's like, on the one hand, the Democrats are fools, but on the other hand, they're also just so hapless.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we all, the kind of the conventional wisdom now is it's going to be Kerry, who, of course, will beat no one.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean,
no one.
There are things about Kerry that I find a little less than compelling. I mean, the problem with the guy is that he's all steak and not a lot of sizzle. And Dean, you could argue, is exactly the opposite. You know, Kerry may be an extraordinarily competitive candidate because he's got a hell of a lot of experience with a lot of those very serious international, you know, diplomacy issues that are, you know, extremely important in these troubled times. And he's got that ass-kicking war, record in Vietnam, where he's a legitimate American hero who, like, dodged bullets and saved other guys'
lives. And that Green Beret showed up, but Kerry saved my life.
Yes, exactly. And that cat's a Republican, and he's voting for him.
Yeah, but he's just, but you know, the thing is, he's just not a fighter in the political sense. He's not, and that's what it's going to take. Because, you know, maybe Karl Rove is going to be out there with a tire iron.
Well, that's going to be the sort of hideous media game, is going to be those guys with their candy-assed... guy who sort of miraculously enough managed to dodge service in Vietnam, and he's going to be painting himself as the war hero against Kerry. But the one thing is, you know, if Kerry is a is the candidate, then you ain't going to be seeing no man in a, you know, president in a flight suit.
Yeah.
That's pretty much done.
Well, you know, Wesley Clark last night during the debate, who, you know, I don't know, it maybe end up being a VP candidate, but Wesley Clark actually at one point, Peter Jennings, and they did it twice, actually. Wesley Clark was introduced at one of his rallies by Michael Moore.
Yeah.
And Michael Moore made the comment. He said, you know, this is the man I'm endorsing for president. He said, I cannot wait to see the general debate the deserter.
Yeah.
And Peter Jennings kind of called him out on it, and he said, well, you know, that General Clark, that's not supported by the facts, which I think actually it is.
Yes, it is.
It really is right. Supported by the facts,
like,
that he's a deserter.
You ask the guy, like, in the 2000 election, it's like, well, what happened in that last year of national service where it seems like you didn't really show up? And he's like, I can't remember.
Yeah, it was,
and it's like, oh, okay, blind. We'll leave it at that. We'll go back and we'll complain about, you know, and we'll start badgering Al Gore about whether he said he invented the internet or not, as opposed to whether this guy ran out on his last year.
But Clark wouldn't. He backed down on it. That's the thing I didn't like. Is they called? They said they told Clark. They said, well, that's not. George Bush is not a deserter. It's not supported by that. And Clark actually said his fatal mistake last night is they said, do you have a problem with Michael Moore calling the president a deserter? And Wesley Clark said twice. Said. Well, I haven't followed up those facts. I haven't followed that up. And so it's just, you know, and that's the sort of thing that
it's a seal. It ain't exactly a shriek of...
But that's the sort of thing that seals it shut right there, you know.
Well,
people latch on to things like that when you say, in a debate, you know, that you don't. He just doesn't seem aggressive enough. So Al Sharpton continues to be the most impressive and fantastically entertaining of all of those guys, though.
Yeah, well, he's on the road. I mean, he's campaigning for larger speaker fees, and I mean, he's one of those kind of candidates.
But
him and Kucinich.
But it does. You know, every time that guy opens his mouth, I want to vote for him. Every time Al Sharpton says anything,
get him going on Tawana Brawley and see how you feel.
Yeah. Well, but he's just. But I mean, he's just, because the thing is, I long ago got rid of this idea that my vote changes anything, and I don't mean that in the sense of that my guy, you know, in the sense of a vote stealing thing, although that's clearly become an issue recently. I'm just saying I'm not really of the opinion anymore that the guy who's the president is really going to make my life, you know, a lot better ever. So, you know, so to me it's become sheer entertainment. I mean, to me it's just now pure, like, blood sport. That's the whole, you know, I just have kind of the Hunter Thompson attitude. It's just sheer entertainment value to me now.
Well, but I mean, I think that kind of cynicism is easy because your feelings don't really get hurt. But on the other hand, I think that it really can make a difference, and it really is important, and people really ought to think really hard and about the direction of the country and what is actually benefiting not only them but the people they know and the people they see around them on the streets every day, and vote accordingly. It's a small thing you can do that's hugely important. And yeah, you can argue, like, I'm just a little drop in a bucket. Well, yeah, absolutely. It's a really, really big bucket, and maybe someone's poking holes, and you're part of the bucket, and your drops aren't even going to count. But, you know, it's still worth it.
What can you do?
It's a small, you know, it doesn't even cost anything. Just walk on down and do it.
It's not even really that I view myself as a drop in the bucket. It's just that I accept that. It's like, you know, that's the thing. I always quote it's Sturgeon's Law, that 90% of people are evil and stupid because 90% of everything is evil and stupid. So it's not, let me put it this way. I will much more readily accept that a president's going to make my life a hell of a lot worse than I will accept that he's going to make my life. The best I hope for is that he makes my life worse, like, slowly. You know, that he decreases my quality of life, like, to a smaller degree, you know, than George W. Bush. That's kind of all I can hope for at this point. So I just take the entertainment value. But like last night we were talking about the Joe Lieberman. Like, I don't know. First of all, I don't know why he's running as a Democrat. But even apart from that, I want to know who whispers in his ear. No, Joe, it's all you.
Yeah.
No. These other guys are pikers, Joe. It's you.
Yeah.
Because Jennings actually out and out told him last night. Jennings said, "When the time comes, will you support John Kerry?" And Lieberman, you know, like, basically, like, Joe, give it up, man.
Right.
And Lieberman said, oh, "I still believe that I am."
Well,
the
that's
most,
what he's got to say. You know, I mean, it's like. And it's annoying for Jennings to even ask that question, because it's a horse race question. It's not a substantive issue question. I mean, I don't know what the context was, but it's the sort of stuff I just don't see why. You know, it's like on the Diane Sawyer thing with Howard Dean last night. She kept badgering him and his wife about, first of all. Why doesn't she campaign with him? Why doesn't she campaign with him?
She's got a
job. Why doesn't she campaign with him? Why doesn't she campaign with him? And then, eventually, she said, well, then why are you here? Is this just the save the campaign thing? It's like, lady, go to hell. We're, you know, get out of our little.
Wouldn't it be great just to see her smack her? You know, just see him, just, you know, just, yeah, just a smack right across the face the next time you get that.
Shut the hell up.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. Just a good shut that, a good that's crap,
right, and then a scream.
Right as he comes after he slugs her.
Yeah! We'll be back to talk about the whitest thing in the history of the world. Stay there. Don't go anywhere.
From the KOTK Newsroom, here's your Northwest update.
Hello, and I'm Tim Riley. This news brought to you by Horizon Air. Searchers looking for two missing clam diggers near Long Beach have found a body not yet identified, but the Pacific County Sheriff's Office says clothes match the missing woman. Jeanette Karen had gone clam digging Monday with Jean Lafleur at Ledbetter Point. That's at the northern tip of Long Beach Peninsula. Their car found Tuesday stuck in the sand. Coast Guard has been involved in the search along with rescue volunteers from Pacific, Gray Harbor, Lewis, and Thurston counties. A Boeing spokesman said the company's waiting for the official word from the British government on a $24 billion order for air tankers. Those Boeing tankers would use 767 airframes built in Everett and modified in Wichita. Well, if you live in Clark County at the 1,000-foot level in the Western Columbia Gorge, or if you live downtown Vancouver, Battleground, Hood River, Cascade, Longsview, Stevenson, chances are you could see some snow. As for the rest of us, rain for the entire weekend. Tim Riley, KOTK News.